Notice Zacchaeus is the wealthy tax collector. He wasn't well-liked in his community. But rather than join the neighbors in providing this person, Jesus asked him to come down. He offered him the hand of fellowship. He said, Zacchaeus, today I must stay at your house. And in doing so, Jesus once again opened himself up to some charges. This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them, for he has gone to sit at the house of a sinner. The slippery thing is that when mired in judgment, it is so easy to confirm your own bias. If you were one of Zacchaeus' neighbors and thought he was just this dishonest sinner, this other who doesn't deserve any kind of respect or relationship, you'd probably find no shortage of examples to prove your point. You might look at one thing he did and say, aha, see, I knew it. That Zacchaeus is just rotten to the core. But to see Jesus welcome him, to call him by name, to spend the day at his house would have been disruptive, to say the least. Disruptive because those of us who are in judgment with him, judge Zacchaeus, would say, yes, this person is the other is not worth anyone's attention, and then seeing the Son of God call him by name, offer him the hand of fellowship. Wait a minute, what's going on? Because that kind of disruption is so important. Because it opens the chance for us to change not only how we're relating to another person, but to change our whole worldview. It's the grace of God which enacts this kind of change in us. Because when you look at the world or other people through gospel eyes, everything changes. The world itself looks different, and people you may have considered enemies now appear more human. It's as if you have traded one set of glasses for another. I know quite a bit about this because just a few months ago I traded my old glasses in for another. In a very literal sense, I have terrible eyesight. Often just wear my contacts. But I had glasses that I used for when it was time to go to bed, settle down for the evening. And because I don't wear them that much, I tend to go a long time in between getting new glasses. And my old ones, let me tell you, they were not a pretty sight. The lenses had turned kind of yellow, amberish. There were scratches all over them. And to be honest, I couldn't really see very well out of them. Through everything that was there, it distorted what I was seeing. So I got my new pair, I put them on, and I said, wow, this is really different. I can certainly see the world much more clearly. The thing was, over time, all those defects in my old pair of glasses, they just built up a little bit and a little bit more, so there was never this dramatic, gosh, I'm not seeing things properly. It happened so slowly that I just kind of accepted it as the way things were. Imagine a similar realization can occur, or probably did occur, when people saw Zacchaeus the way Jesus saw him. Or for that matter, when we see anyone the way Jesus sees them. All of a sudden, it's not just that person that everything looks so much clearer about, but the whole world. Is people saw him as a much more complex human being. But if we are to guard ourselves against those things in this world, the kind of sinful patterns that distort our vision, it's important to know what they are. Just like if I didn't know what a scratch was on the lenses of glasses, I wouldn't be able to describe what a scratch. I'd have to know what a scratch is in order to say, yes, there's something wrong here. And if I didn't know that, I wouldn't realize my need for something else, for something new. In the early 90s, there was a man named Albert Hirschman who wrote a treatise entitled The Rhetoric of Reaction. And he identified several narratives, actually there are three of them, and it seemed like their only purpose was to judge and to shut down further discussion. And he saw these playing out all through history, going back to the French Revolution and that they continue to this day. He entitled those narratives as a narrative of perversity, of utility, and jeopardy. What do those do? Well, the perversity narrative suggests that an action to improve a situation will actually make it worse. The guy, you think you're being helpful here, but trust me, you're just going to make things worse. The situation's inevitable, and there's really nothing you can do about it, so just stop. Sometimes referred to as the law of unintended consequences, which from what I can tell is a rhetorical device. I'm not aware of any actual law that says there has to be unintended consequences. So that's the perversity narrative. So you know you can't do that, you're just going to make things worse. Closely related one was the futility narrative. It also holds that our current situation is inevitable, therefore any attempts to change or improve it will ultimately fail. So why invest any resources? Just trying. And, you know, why even bother? And then finally, there is the jeopardy narrative, which has nothing to do with Alex Trebek. It actually suggests that even if change is possible, that it's just going to cost so much more than we realize that the end result won't be worth it. Now, all three of these narratives evoke judgments of some sort. You know, you can't do this because, and it has a sense of finality about it. There's a certitude. We can say, well, yes, it's okay. And what they do is they shut down conversation by evoking strong emotions of despair, anger, or disgust, especially when they're directed towards another human being. Really do a number on existing relationships. And just to be fair, those wishing to make changes have also been guilty of employing such narratives, but to their own ends. They have their own little twists. So Hirschman describes three other progressive narratives as follows. There is a synergy illusion, which just assumes that any kind of change is good and they're all going to work together nicely. So we should just do it because the outcome is going to be good. Might be, it might not be. There's another one that he described as the imminent danger narrative. That says that if we don't do this, something catastrophic is going to happen. So you better vote my way or support me on this or whatever. Better do what I'm advocating for because catastrophe is right around the corner. And then there's a final one that's, I like this one a whole lot, because it always suggests that history is on my side. Yeah, anyone who disagrees with me, they're going to be on the wrong side of history. And I know this because I have a crystal ball, and I can look at this crystal ball, and I can see the future, and I can see how history is going to play out. And in this history that always plays out, I am always right. Always morally correct. Yeah, that never actually happens. And I'm sure if you look around a little, you'll see all kinds of examples of these arguments. There's a finality about them, and they seek to shut down conversation in favor of the speaker's current position, whether you're advocating for a change or opposed to a change. They are alluring because each narrative has a sense of certainty. That certainty comes at a price, and that price is judgment. And the price of judgment is authentic relationships with other human beings. We can't love our neighbor as ourself when we are simultaneously judging them. They have all of our hallmarks of, I'm right, you're just ill-informed, you're responsible, you're just plain stupid. When you look at life in gospel eyes, the way Jesus did with Zacchaeus, things are quite different. We may let go of some certainty in favor of love and faithfulness. We let go of certainty in time and avail ourselves of possibility. Gospel eyes may require further conversation, but we will also have a clearer idea of who our neighbors are and what they are truly like. Jesus offered fellowship and possibility to Zacchaeus first, before he did anything else. Zacchaeus, come down from that sycamore tree. Today I need to stay at your house. It was offering love before anything else, before Zacchaeus had even uttered a word. After Jesus looked at him with gospel eyes, Zacchaeus revealed himself as a much more complex human being. Yes, he was someone mired in an oppressive system, and yes, he benefited greatly from that system. And at the same time, Zacchaeus was somebody who was capable of great love and charity. Look, today I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone, I repay them four times over. Could any of us have known Zacchaeus would respond in such a way before offering the hand of fellowship? No, do we expect him to get his life together first and then we have fellowship? The gospel actually works in the other way. It's very likely that without the hand of fellowship, without love of neighbors ourselves, we ourselves are mired in judgment. Zacchaeus himself would also dig his heels in, and everyone would be stuck. Here's why Jesus' offer to him, Jesus' love towards him, is such a beautiful thing, because it's the intervention in the world that gets it unstuck. The gospel offers us a very different way of looking at the world and our fellow human. In the gospel, we are invited to set aside judgment and open ourselves up to the possibility of goodness. Jesus did this with Zacchaeus. Jesus didn't look up at that sycamore tree and see a sinner. Jesus looked up and saw a human being in need of love and fellowship. That love and fellowship resulted in some amazing transformation. It made a difference with Zacchaeus, and it can make a difference with you and I. Through our gospel lives, we can set aside current prejudices, trite narratives, and approach the world with great possibility. This can happen.